The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show. Boy, I love our off-air conversations. They're so exciting, right? They touch on a lot of subjects. Some are expletive and X-rated and R-rated and PG. And
I never cursed.
No, you
on air?
No, never. You don't. I've heard you say a cuss word or two, but you never curse. This is OT. We're back, man, to the Good Morning Show. 7:05 a.m. in the morning. If you're out there, tune in, call, and tell everybody. Mr. Think 504 is on with us right now. We're doing our segment, Think 504, Making New Orleans Think. One of the number one bloggers and journalists and writers and editorialists in this region right now, Jeff Thomas. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show.
Thank you, Oliver. Thanks for having me. Thanks to the WBOK audience for listening. I tell you, every time I come on, I look at the website and bam, we get a bounce, man. So I appreciate the audience and thanks for the opportunity.
Well, first of all, I appreciate the style and manner in which you give us the news. In an age where it's so watered down, in an age where whether it's alternative facts, real facts, factual facts, you know, sometimes you don't know what you're getting. You really give us stuff that makes us think. It's hard hitting.
Well, thank you.
You do your homework.
You
will talk to your sources. And the beautiful thing about what you do, Jeff Thomas, Mr. Think 504, is that you deal with issues that other people don't, and you deal with it fairly.
Right.
And you really do. And you're unapologetically pro-black, but you also challenge our community on a lot of issues that we ought to be dealing with within our community. So it's the same thing we try to do here on the Good Morning Show.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm fortunate that, you know, I have a bunch of good writers who are writing
for me.
Yes,
you do.
I've got other people who are coming on board, Kenneth Cooper, Jamie Morris, people like that who are doing great jobs. In fact, I suggest people go to Think 504 and read Kenneth Cooper's article about Trump. White supremacists and the Confederates. He breaks it down. He does a great job. He's a funny guy, too, in his articles. So he would be one that I would recommend people look at. And we try to bring a black perspective. It's what we do.
Yes. But in bringing an African-American or black perspective, it's really a perspective for everyone. You know, the issues we deal with here on WBOK, and I appreciate all of our listeners, man. We have listeners from all walks of life here. I can be in St. Tammany, Jefferson Parish, St. Bernard, when people will come up to me who are non-African-American. Mm-hmm. And they say, I like the information. I like the people you bring on that informs us. Mm-hmm. That's really what it's about. You know, we say it like we think it is. We give you the information, and you can deal with it as you see fit.
Exactly right. I think the black perspective is real. It is important, and it needs to be brought out. That's part of the problem in New Orleans media, particularly the print media. Mm-hmm. Often you get one, like, for example, my friends over at the TP, you know, if it's not for Jarvis DeBerry, you're not getting the black perspective.
No.
The Advocate has no black writer who brings real strong opinions. And so that was part of the reason that Think 504 came about 10 years ago. And we're just trying to continue the mission of informing, uplifting the lives of African-American people through information.
And the diversity of the articles. From healthy sexual relationships
to how we get along, rebuilding
our community, whether it's housing. It's not just about race. It's about accountability and government management.
Right.
Business, all of it.
Right. And a lot of times it's about black people oftentimes it's about us taking responsibility for ourselves and our own actions and our own family.
Man, and let's talk about taking responsibility. Jason Williams is the first one to come out the box and say, we need to accept responsibility for what happened with these storm drains and the flooding.
Yeah.
The mayor said the buck stops with him.
Right. Listen, this is the monumental
failure. At the end of the day.
Listen, talking about the black perspective, for at least 8 months, Think 504 has been calling Mitch Landrieu a failure.
Mm-hmm.
His administration is nothing but abject incompetency.
Mm-hmm.
He has failed to deliver good government. The most basic thing, what we need from government is protection. What we need from government is reliability.
Then how do you explain the national acclaim? How do you explain the fact that the media, he's been a darling of the media? How do you explain that? And if you read the article in New Republic that came out, it basically says that while he was lauded and applauded on the surface, that heart issues that matter were being unaddressed. And that's the first time a national mm-hmm. correspondent has called that out.
Right.
But how is it that our local media has not dug down in the weeds in these issues, many issues that we're still dealing with today, many that are worse than they were before he took office?
Right. So you asked two questions. The first is, how did he rise to fame nationally? And second, why is the local media giving him a pass,
I think?
Well, I'll answer the first question first. He's risen to fame nationally because there is a dearth of leadership in the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. The Democratic Party is scrambling. The Democratic Party doesn't have any real candidates. Joe Biden, mm-hmm. Who else is there? Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
And so beyond that, there are no young upcoming.
And Bernie Sanders is an independent.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So there's an opportunity.
Good point.
And then when he did the great thing, which I said and I applauded,
it was
taking down your monuments. Yeah. I mean, he started this national trend. I mean, this is a great thing that he mm-hmm. did. So because he did one great thing, he rose up the ranks, and
national
that was
platform.
It. Yeah, that gave him the national platform. And you know, so all politics are local, though, right? And so why is it that the local media is giving him a pass? Well, they've been complicit in his incompetence. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to take to task the local media, besides maybe Lee Zurich, who is particularly aggressive in rooting out corruption. We have, I hate to say, a lazy media. What they don't want to do is they don't want to ruffle feathers. They don't want to upset the apple cart. It's the same notion of with the city council.
In real talk, Jeff Thomas, real talk, answer me this question.
Mm-hmm.
It's been asked before, and quietly in the barbershops, beauty shops, mm-hmm. when folk mm-hmm. are in their professional meet, smoking their cigars and mm-hmm. sipping their cavassier. Mm-hmm. if Ms. Chalandru was African-American,
sure.
How do you think he would have been treated or would be being treated right now?
Well, you know, I it's obvious. If you compare the end of the last mayoral regime and the end of this mayoral regime, one was being pilloried, one was being, they had murder on TV every day. They were going after the police chief. I think it was Warren Riley mm-hmm. at the time. And now we have a worse crime problem. But, you know, we kind of shifted a little bit because now we're focused on flooding. And even there, you know, the scapegoat is Cedric Grant and the incompetence of some of the leadership at the Sewage and Water Board when everything lies at the feet of this mayor. Mm-hmm. This is a small market, a small town, and the mayor controls a lot of the resources and a lot of what happens economically for people. So people are afraid to attack the mayor, unlike Jeff Thomas, who has attacked him regularly, consistently, and persistently.
But you've also given him credit when you
right is right and wrong is wrong. Right. So he was right. He did a great thing when he took down the monuments. He did a great thing. But everything else, because you do one good thing, doesn't make you a great person. It doesn't make you a substantive person.
Jeff Thomas, is this Ms. Chalandru's Katrina?
Well, I don't know. When you say that, that gives me pause because if you mean is this Ray Nagin's opportunity to lead, I think Ray Nagin did a good thing through Katrina. This unfortunate, I mean, he brought the city back. He ruffled some
when
feathers.
When we found him.
Right. Exactly. Well, that's true. That's true. When he got back. Right. But you know, here's the thing. Mitch Landrieu and the Storm Harvey that's out there, if mm-hmm. that was coming to New Orleans, the incompetence, the failure, the misery.
You wouldn't feel safe.
I don't feel safe, and it's going to Texas. And they're talking about just some rain. And so I'm saying that this mayor has been an abject failure. He has been thrown to be incompetent, and his incompetence should be criminal. His incompetence, he's putting the lives of people at risk. I mean, crime is out of control across the board. We have no levy protection.
How did they all of a sudden find the money to deal with these turbines, pumps, and storm drains? Now, the money, evidently the money had been there.
The money was there and the jobs that listen, this, the abject failure and incompetence is beyond belief. It is shocking. It is beyond proportion. It makes you I am at a loss for words, and I usually use words on a regular basis. And I'm at a loss for words at how
I'm
in the word business, and it is dismaying, it's shocking, it's beyond belief. And the fact is that they have raided the coffers of the Sewage and Water Board, and things that we need to be doing, like investing in turbines and changing the electric system, those things aren't going to get done now because we have to do stuff that we should have done before. General maintenance. Let me explain what I think is the big problem in the city of New Orleans right now, and the problem and the failure of the mayor is management. Mm-hmm. What the city needs is a strong manager. The city needs somebody who can, you know, we have a security department, we call it the police. We have a drainage department, mm-hmm. we call it the sewage and water board. We have a streets department. And all of these places, all of these departments have heads. And so what is
smoke and mirrors and political politics and that's not enough anymore.
No, right. Because what we have is a huge organization. We have thousands of employees across multiple sectors doing many different jobs. And so the mayor can't be an expert on police and can't be an expert on sewer and can't be an expert on cleaning streets and fixing streets. What we need, though, is an expert on management. Somebody who can hire the right people, somebody who can inspire people to do a good job.
And trust them enough to make decisions.
And trust them enough to make decisions, but inspire them. You know, good managers are able to motivate people. Good managers are able to get people to work extra.
You want a bunch of, without a bunch of yes men and yes women.
Exactly right. So what we've had is a failure in management, a failure in the ability to put people in place to do things. And so that's what we need. You know, it's a critically important. We have this new election coming up. It's critically important that we have somebody who understands management, somebody who can manage huge organizations, somebody with that kind of experience. If we don't have that, we're going to be in trouble.
504-260-9265. He makes you think.
That's the failure of the Landrieu administration. The failure is his management. He is a poor manager. He does not hire the right people. I mean, these are his people, handpicked, that he put in place.
Right.
Jernigan, Sewage and Water Board, Cedric Grant. He went to the legislature and changed the law so Cedric Grant could become head of the Sewage and Water Board. I mean, but the problem is that he does not know how to inspire people to do great work.
But you know, many people have said, and they questioned it then, that was too much for one person to handle. To have Cedric Grant over everything, including the tiddlywink department.
And again, that's a part of being a good manager, right? Because you can't give people more of the work than is humanly possible. You can't expect people to do 20 people's jobs.
Well, we're going to get into these local elections, but, breaking news, coroner, Dr. Jeffrey Rouse, has resigned, leaving possibly Dr. McKenna to be the first African-American.
Not possibly. He definitely is.
Well, but what I'm telling people, though, is that
first in the state?
The first... Rouse's name is still going to be on the ballot.
All right. Mm-hmm.
So if people vote for Rouse, then if by some freakish chance
he wins,
then he has to resign.
Sure. Right. I got it. I get
it.
Right.
So what I'm trying to tell people is that it's not automatic.
Right. Exactly right. You know? We still have a process to go through. But the good news is that, you know, Dr. Rouse is leaving. I had heard about this early yesterday morning before the news broke. And I guess some of the backstory is that, you know, Dr. Rouse, people are wondering whether or not there's something sinister going on, whether or not, you know, he got caught doing something dirty or something like that. I don't think that's it at all. What I hear is that it's about money for him and his family. Now, he's got kids in private schools, which are extremely expensive. And, you know, being there, he came from the private sector where he worked as a doctor and made much more money.
A whole lot more money.
Yeah. And so he recognized his family suffered as a result of his service.
Ray Nagin found out you take a pay cut.
And so, you know, I think that that's the reason that he decided not to run. And, you know, it was obvious when he wasn't showing up to forums, he wasn't showing up for, you know, question and answering session with the Alphabet Soup organizations. And so
what I like, though, and let me say, I like Dr. Rouse. He was a contributor to the show. He addressed issues head on. He was community oriented. He would show up. You could talk to him. You could call him. He would meet with people. He had a heart for the job. I like, though, in his statement that he thought that Dwight McKenna would add even a whole nother level to it, given he's an African-American, a black doctor in this town. We all know Dr. Kenneth's passion for young people. I think he initiated the first study on the plight of the black male in New Orleans when he was on the school board years ago.
Dr. McKenna's been a leader for years.
Yeah, so Dr. Rouse is predicting that the profile of the office, especially in these meaningful areas around violence and what's happening to black men, Dr. McKenna will even raise that profile.
Right, and I think also that there, you know, one of the problems, one of the times when the coroner's office gets political is when, you know, how you classify certain deaths and that kind of stuff. And so people need to believe and understand that the coroner is going to be above board, that the coroner is going to be above race, that the coroner is going to be above politics, and that the coroner is going to give you the facts as they are. And I feel confident that we can trust Dr. McKenna
in that
regard.
No doubt about it.
I think the city benefits from his presence.
He's going to call it like he sees it, like the evidence says it is, and no matter who it is.
That's right.
And I have a full faith in that Dr. McKenna will always be upfront and honest with us about whatever happens, especially with his job.
That's
so
right.
Congratulations, Dr. McKenna. Man, you know, usually we start national and work our way back, but there was so much breaking news and so many things that were important to us. We started off here in our backyard, but this president and his double talk is comfort for neo-Nazis and white nationalists. And it's just I don't know. The James Clapper, the former head of one of the former heads of the intelligence,
said he wasn't fit to serve.
He questions his mental stability right now. Mm-hmm. He's gone out there and he says, "I don't think this person is fit to serve. I have pause for concern about his mental stability." Mm-hmm. I tend to agree.
Do you? I disagree.
Okay.
Let me tell you why.
Please.
I don't think that we should all be shocked by what we're seeing from Donald Trump. It's perfectly understandable. And if you listen to me.
You think it's part of a strategy. So no, convince me. Talk to me.
Let me tell you what it is.
Talk to me.
You know,
I think he cuckoo. You say no.
Right. Okay. I think what you see is, his whole thing is that he is an authentic being, that he is, I mean, he brings authenticity.
None other like him.
Right. His perspective is real. And so when you are being an authentic person, part of being authentic is being offensive. Part of being authentic is not being politically correct.
Mm-hmm.
Part of being authentic is telling it like you think you see it. And so that's why he's able to be out here and be all over the place, because people have an expectation that he's going to be that way. People are not surprised. In fact, he's not deviating from people's expectations. People expect that when you are an authentic person.
So you don't think the so-and-so crazy?
Right. I don't think he is. I think he represents lots of people's viewpoints.
Everybody in the studio looking at you.
I know. They're like, am I tripping or what? Yeah.
No, but I appreciate it. Right. So tell me, when he says, when he gives cover to racists, when he says stuff like, you know, everybody's at fault, you think
blame on both sides.
You think that's how he really feels?
Well, listen, this is an example of what was a concept called moral licensing. You know, whenever I come on, you know, we bring in, you know, topics that I think help push forward our agenda.
Implicit bias,
confirmation bias, narrative bias.
Right.
And now we're talking, and let's talk a little bit about those, because they're kind of all related, you know. When we talk about implicit bias, it's that bias when you see a black man, you're walking down the street at night, you get a little bit afraid. Confirmation bias is when...
And you can be black.
Listen. I'm walking down the wrong street, and
real talk.
I mean, right. But confirmation bias is you listen to information and you talk about information that's only confirming what you want it to be, and you ignore other facts just so that what you want the issue to be is what the issue is. And the narrative bias is the bias of the story of America, that black people are bad, that white people are supreme. That's the narrative bias under which we live. Now, moral licensing is this concept that we have to understand. And that's what's going on. How did we go from, in America, how did we go from electing Barack Obama to electing Donald Trump, right? It's about moral licensing. And so it's a thing that when
educate me, Jeff Thomas.
All right. When you do a good act, or when you do something that's pro-social, it doesn't mean that the next thing that you do is likely to be a good act or pro-social. Mm-hmm. In fact, not always, but in fact, most of the time, the next thing that you do
can be devilish.
It's going to be a bad thing. That's the way it is. I mean,
Jeff Thomas,
let me tell you,
making us think.
When you're walking down the street and you give $5.
Jeff, I've never looked at you like this before in the studio. You are definitely making me think.
I want you to. I want us to understand why Donald Trump is able to operate the way he is, why we're in this climate in America today, mm-hmm. why we got Nazis marching in the street. You think it's
a natural response to what we've just went through with our last president and with the issues that are facing this country? Let me say this to you. Mm-hmm. You're kind of making sense that if you talk about human nature, mm-hmm. it's a natural response given what's happening with the economy, jobs leaving, the white middle class struggling right now, the need to blame someone.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a little different than that.
Okay, well, we got to take a break.
Okay.
We're going to finish this conversation when we come back. I don't know what's wrong with our listening audience out there, but we're on some heavy, heavy subjects. But y'all better wake up, man. Jeff Thomas is making us think. He said Donald Trump is not as cuckoo as OT and the Early Bird says he is.
We're going to break it down when we come back.
And when we come back, we're not only going to break this down, but we're going to get back to, should we boycott the NFL?
Mm-hmm.
Tom Benson and Dixie Beer?
Dixie Beer. Come on.
Wow.
Give me a break.
We'll be back after the break. Huh.
WBOK, 1230 AM, The People's Station.
You're listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back. Welcome back to The Good Morning Show. Oliver O.T. Thomas, the early bird. And the entire WBOK listening audience. And you were trying to explain to me, Jeff Thomas, why... And everybody in the studio looked at you, including the early bird. Why Donald Trump isn't cuckoo?
Mm-hmm.
Why his head isn't in his go-go necessarily all the time, and why there's an explanation mm-hmm. for what he says and what he does. You come up with all these phrases. It's moral licensing. Mm-hmm. There's a method to mm-hmm. his madness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, listen. He probably does have some mental issues, without a doubt. He's a petulant child. He acts like the bigot that he is because he's white privilege on steroids. Mm-hmm. He's mm-hmm. all of those things. But what I'm referring to, his moral light, the idea, this concept of moral licensing, mm-hmm. kind of helps us understand why we got Nazis walking in the street today, why we have, the rise of the Ku Klux Klan, mm-hmm. why we got priests coming out saying I was in the Klan and that kind of stuff. And that is because of moral licensing.
The sheets and the hoods are coming off.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
Right. On the heels of Barack Obama, right. You were right. On the heels of Barack Obama, where we had a push to the left in the country, where he was elected mm-hmm. twice, people feel now like, hey, I'm not I can now be out in the street and I can now be a Nazi. I can now call mm-hmm. for, racist ideas, and it's okay because you can't say that I'm racist because you know what? We elected a black man twice.
But Jeff Thomas, walk with me here, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So what is it about much of middle America, white people, especially young white men and white men now, right? Mm-hmm. And even many women, 63% mm-hmm. of white women voted for Trump, right? Mm-hmm. What is it about? Are they not reading the paper? Do they not see that the percentage of African Americans and Hispanics that are locked up? Do they not see the disparities in earnings where African Americans and Hispanics still lead in unemployment?
Sure.
Do they not see that the poverty levels for those people that they think are taking their jobs and taking their way of life, that our poverty levels are actually increasing? So what is it that they're seeing getting that is different from the from the real data?
Well, that's part of the narrative bias that we talked about.
Okay.
And what the narrative bias is that white people are privileged, white people are supreme and that black people are inferior. Black people are criminals. Black people.
And anytime they hurt, it has to be one of our group's fault.
Exactly right. If something's happening to black people, it's because of what black people did.
But Jeff, if something
starts happening to white people, then something is wrong.
But Jeff, it's the white CEOs of corporations that are moving the jobs overseas.
Mm-hmm.
It's the white CEOs of corporations, the ones mm-hmm. that hotels and major businesses
mm-hmm.
in Fortune 500 and Fortune 100 and Fortune 1000 companies that where wages have not kept pace with the cost of living. It's those white CEOs, those business cartel members who have said that benefits. It's the white presidents who are running educational institutions that have raised tuition.
Mm-hmm.
That have shipped our jobs. So you got maybe a half an African American or one or two females out of those thousands of businessmen who control the world?
Right. No, you don't. You don't. But part of the problem is when we're talking this idea of white supremacy, when we're talking this idea.
But why don't they blame the people who are doing it?
You mean white people?
Yeah.
Who are not in the elite?
The people who look like them.
Part of that is. This goes back to Willie Lynch. This goes back to white people wanting, if I'm bad, at least I'm not black. And so at least I'm not living in the Philippines.
Right.
At least I'm not, I am living in America, the greatest country in the world, part of the narrative. People believe wholeheartedly this notion that of American exceptionalism, this notion that living here in America, it has some benefits that it's the best country in the world, and everybody hearing me now is saying, yeah, well, it is the best country in the world.
But these men marching saying the Jews will not replace us, and what people didn't get was that they weren't saying that the Jews were going to physically replace them, but that the Jews were going to use their money and influence to replace them with these immigrant groups.
Sure.
That's what they were actually saying.
Well, right. So, again, you're conflating a couple of things, and so I want to.
Work with me because we're going to get off of this and get on to some other stuff. But educate me because this is important, man.
Well, I think that there are a few things in play. And one of them is that the same reason that people vote against their own self-interest, the notion of being in the embrace of whiteness is better than being not white. And so... But we couch that against capitalism, and capitalism is about haves and have-nots. Capitalism is about elites. Capitalism is about
the
an
American
elite ruling
dream.
Class. Right. And so even though, we have Confederates and we have people who are descendants of these Confederates, we've had haves and have-nots in America forever. The difference is the white have-nots have this step up that they are white and that they're not black, and so they can have some solace, some comfort in being white. And so because they have that solace and comfort, that gives them the ability to ignore the reality. And that's part of confirmation bias. That's part of, listen, I ignore all of these other real facts to feel secure and safe that in my whiteness, great things are happening. In my whiteness, I have the potential to rise above this. Because I'm white, I don't have the limitations that black people have. And so I may not be a millionaire today, but I'm going to be a millionaire tomorrow. And I have a better chance of being a millionaire tomorrow than the rest of these other people who are.
But wouldn't they be better served marching on Bank of America, marching on Wall Street, marching on Chevrolet, marching on these corporations
you're talking about the Nazis.
I'm talking about the whites who feel like someone's taking something from them.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people who look like them that are outsourcing. It's the people who look like them that are suppressing wages.
Let me just say, I was never more proud than what happened in Boston. You had a few hundred Nazis and skinheads and Ku Klux Klansmen, and you had tens of thousands of diverse people coming out and saying, not in my town. And so I think that we're isolating more and more these racists who have this.
But your point is that it's a natural order to what we've seen in terms of what America's going through after a black president, the people struggling to survive no matter what their race are. So you all believe this is kind of natural way of playing itself out.
Well, right. Moral as it relates to moral licensing, that is, and you gave me, and I completely ignored that, you gave me the perfect example of what moral licensing is. Moral licensing for these people is I have the ability to go out and say, kill the Jews, forget black people, white
go
is
back
supreme.
To Africa, go back to Africa.
Right, because listen, we had, years and years of this black president, and I didn't come out then.
Okay.
And so it's kind of how you live your life. Like if you go on a diet, then the next thing you know, you can eat five Milky Ways or whatever.
That's why they call him Think504.com, Mr. Think. I think I get it, Jeff. I really do. I think I get it. There's a natural order to human nature and how we respond.
It's human nature.
We're all programmed,
right?
Reprogrammed to a certain level.
Yes, yes. When we do something good, we're likely to do something bad. The next step that we do, the next thing that we do after we do something good, instead of doing another good thing, right, we're likely to do a bad thing because we feel privileged. We feel entitled now.
Another black man. woman.
You bring up a good point, and that's something I want to say. You have a lot of when you do a study about this kind of stuff, you look at firsts, right? There are a lot of first-time elected women in cities and all around the world and countries around the world.
Yeah.
But there are not many, very few places that have elected a second woman.
You're absolutely correct.
As
a matter of fact, many of the women who've been elected have been one term.
Exactly right.
Lines are lit up right now. Okay. Line two, God bless you, Mike. You're on with OT, the Early Bird, and MrThink504.com.
Good morning, Early Bird at 504. I'm trying to figure out what this conversation is about.
Moral licensing.
So this guy's telling me, as a lower middle-income white person, the only reason I voted for Trump was because I'm glad I'm not black?
Barack was black.
At this conversation. I know a lot of white people. Not one of them think like you're talking about.
And so, Mike, the point is that you may know a few white people, but we're talking in generalities here. And
we're talking generalities. I can talk generalities too. Generalities are crap.
So why did you vote for Trump, Mike?
Because I want to make this country great again. I want to legalize freedom. We're not free anymore. All I want is this country to prosper. I have no history of the Confederacy, okay? My father was an immigrant, okay? My mom's parents were immigrants. I haven't been here 100 years total.
So
that you say that because I want to preserve the American history, and you can't change history. I don't care what you do to it.
Okay.
That I'm a Nazi?
Well, first of all, Mike, nobody said that. I never said that. Nobody on the
station
ever said
that. Mike, let Jeff explain to you what he means.
So I think what I heard you say is that because you've never been a Nazi, that I'm not sure what you're saying. Let me talk about the history of this country. In the history of this country, black people have been currently. Let's talk about the current state of black affairs. Black people still suffer more poverty, still suffer more unemployment, still suffer more unhealthy conditions than any other race in this country. These are facts.
Okay, and then I also hear in the station that there are more white people on welfare than black people.
Okay, and that's absolutely true.
But that's a statistical fact. I mean, that's data. Because
that is a fact.
There are 100 million more. There are 100 million more white people. Look, this country.
Yeah, but you don't like to talk percentages. You don't like to talk generalities.
I don't talk generalities. This country is 330 million people. 200 million are white. So that's a fact. So if you talk about per capita and percentages, that's a whole other issue. What I think Jeff is trying to say, he's talking about human psychology in many cases, Mike. And he's talking about human nature.
Say that again. Say that again, Mike. What did you say?
Don't even know what you're talking about. You talk about generalities and this and that. But you're talking about stuff. You project a white supremacy on me that I don't even know what you're talking about.
Okay.
I'm lower middle class. I got to work every day to pay my nuts. Every day I got to pay my nuts.
You don't think you have white privilege?
You think I'm getting some kind of a benefit just because I'm white? I'm going to send a letter to the white council because I can't pay my bills? They're going to give me money?
Well, first of all, he didn't say that. I don't have to speak for him, right, but he didn't say that.
You're putting words in my mouth.
Mike, our lines are lit up.
You're putting words in my mouth.
Okay.
You're telling me what I believe. You don't know me.
Okay. Mike,
I gotta work every day to pay.
Good, Mike,
tax.
And you should. You should go to work every day, and it's a wonderful thing. And it's a great thing. Here's the other thing, though. Unfortunately, black people don't have jobs. Black people don't get the benefit of going
God.
To jobs.
You know
that's
what?
Right.
I know
so 52% of black men. 52% of black men are unemployed.
I know black people stayed in school who are working.
Oh, that's right.
Productive.
That's right.
My friends.
Mike, you don't think you have white privilege? You don't think you have there's a benefit?
Sure you do.
And you really don't believe that?
If I get stopped by the cops, I'm still going to get a ticket.
But you're not going to get shot or killed by the cops. That's the difference.
I have white privilege.
I know that you have white privilege.
I don't know what you believe.
Well, white privilege is a fag. And what Jeff is talking about
is
psychology.
White privilege is something made up by black people.
Mike, repeat that. Keep listening, man. You're going to learn a little lot.
White privilege is made up by black people.
I think he proves, actually validates
right. He has the moral license now to come on the air and say white privilege doesn't exist, that white people.
It's not real.
It's not real. You know, and that is a part of this notion of white privilege. That is, he is living out white privilege right here in that phone call. That is the example of white privilege that he can come on. Part of white privilege is the notion that it doesn't exist.
Yes.
That race, when you talk
You're
to me, I'm insulted.
Up.
He was insulted that I had the gall to talk about white privilege. All right, how dare you say these things to me? That is a part of white privilege. That is one of the tenets of white privilege, that I'm uncomfortable, that I'm angry, that I am not going to accept any discomfort related to race. And that is one of the tenets of white privilege. That is another tenet, is to say that I am not a beneficiary of white privilege, that I work hard, and that the people who are not working hard,
that's
black people,
on them.
Yeah. And it's because black people don't work hard that they are in the conditions.
We're going to go to the lines right now. The lines are lit up.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Line three, Cedric, you're on with.
Oh, geez, they're not lit up. They're on fire.
Talk.
Then I can hear that dude without the radio on.
You're all Mr. Look, Think 504.
That's part of white privilege. They don't understand, but ask him, do he want to change places with me or you?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. Listen, I wanted to let him talk, and I wanted
Absolutely.
To let him.
It was good for people to hear.
To hear what white people think and how white people
are.
And
it was good to know how Mike felt.
Sure.
That's an honest conversation.
Absolutely. And good for him. And, you know, he is unconscious about his privilege.
And he believes it.
He believes that he's not doing anything wrong, but he benefits from the societal benefits
go,
of white
Go ahead,
privilege.
Cedric.
I'm sorry, Cedric.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to step on
you. You were talking about the president.
Uh-huh.
He's not crazy, but he's dangerous.
He is.
Think about it. OT, somebody said the other day that how you get the truth. You get the truth from children, you get the truth from drunks, and you get the children from angry people. The dude is angry, he's drunk with power, and he's going into regression.
And he's childish.
He's never come out of childhood. He's been a coddled child all his life.
Yeah, I think that's what Jeff was saying earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that privilege.
And man, that is dangerous, because this is the first time, what's that CIA dude? And that's a tough dude, man. This dude done seen all kind of war, all kind of killing. He done saw it all. Done it all. But anytime this guy see, this is the first time they were concerned about the nuclear coach, a.k.a. football, is the time when Nixon was drinking and getting drunk.
Right.
But this man is drunk with power, and he's been drunk with power from the beginning.
Well, no doubt about it. But also, I think he proves Jeff's theory on white supremacy and white privilege in that, you know, I think Trump is one of the ultimate examples there. So while Mike says he's trying to make America great again, no. Trump is representing that very, very, very symbol of white supremacy. Sexism, narcissism, and all of those things that people believe in terms of their natural right here in America,
right.
Jeff.
Because he says us and our.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And
us and our.
And he means that. Hey, Cedric, great point, man. Thank you, man. We appreciate
all right,
you.
Thank you.
Wow, 504-260-9265. Somebody was on the line. I think they They hung up. Please give us a call back, Miss Michonne. Give us a call back, 504-260-9265. We'd love to hear your point of view. Yeah, I think, you know, you were like, amen, and Mike. Mike was proving.
Right. Well, listen, that's why I let him talk. I wanted him to get out everything that he had to say.
It was important.
It was important. But the importance is that we have to understand that it is the epitome. What you heard from White Mike was white privilege, and so his yelling that he isn't privileged is his privilege. His yelling that, you know, he gets up and goes to work every day.
He works hard every day, but everybody
does. I know I work hard every day, and even people who are unemployed work hard every day. So, but you know, I want to shift a little bit in this conversation to this. What's important, I think, is Dixie Beer. I really want to talk about this Dixie Beer.
Tom Benson bought Dixie Beer as a symbol to bring us together.
Tell me, what is Dixie? Dixie is the Confederacy. That's what Dixie stands for.
So
that's
how does
Dixie
Tom Benson use Dixie Beer to bring us together?
You should look at the label. It has a Confederate flag on the label. I mean, this is tone deaf. This is moral licensing going crazy.
And the local media is giving Benson a pass. They're giving him a pass.
I mean, it is despicable. I don't know if it's photoshopped or if it was just an instance. But, you know, he's got a commercial with Mardi Gras Indians walking down the street. This was maybe in the 50s and 60s or 70s, not the 70s, but the 60s, drinking a Dixie beer and saying that Dixie beer brings us together. Well, I'm not trying to go back into the Confederacy. I'm not trying to get back
into that kind of togetherness.
Right. Like Mike think that's a good thing, but I certainly don't.
But isn't it? And I'm thinking because they don't call you Mr. Think 504 for nothing, because you do, man. Whether it's making White Mike think, whether it's making us think, Jeff, you absolutely do that. But I'm actually thinking, in terms of capitalism, and it was a brilliant strategy to capitalize on white, on with the angst in America right now,
sure.
The divisiveness
sure.
right now.
Sure.
Brilliant move by Tom Benson, because especially white men, those who are angry, those who feel stepped on, those who feel abused, those who feel like America isn't great again, they're going to buy a Dixie beer.
Get me a Dixie beer and I feel good about
it. That's absolutely correct.
And certainly the NFL.
Brilliant move by not going to bring us together,
no.
But Benson's going to make more money.
Yes, more money. And here's the thing, you know, the NFL obviously has an issue with some black men. And we're talking about yesterday, there was this big Colin Kaepernick protest in New York City in front of the NFL headquarters, and it was a great thing. I think we have to ask the question, should we, as New Orleanians, boycott the NFL? Should we?
Well, that question is on Facebook. It's being posted on Twitter and Instagram that many African Americans, many progressive whites right now. Football was struggling anyway. You had a 17% decrease in Thursday. And watching Thursday night football,
right.
Sunday football, I think with the dip,
they saturated the market.
11% in viewership.
Yeah, they thought they could do no wrong. They thought they could expand. But the fact is that their Sunday afternoon is the NFL time. And they're expanding of the market. Monday night football was good.
Well, real talk right here, Jeff Thomas. Are you boycotting football?
You know, I got to tell you,
that's tough.
Is it tough? I mean, you know, I want to watch Leonard Fournette.
I've been conditioned.
Let me tell you, Think 504. I work every Sunday, doing articles and researching and writing and working on the website and working on the newsletter. And Sunday's all my time to do it. But now it's football season, so I have to adjust my schedule. I'm not sure that I want to do that. I want to think back to the Montgomery bus boycott, where people were having to walk to work. People made a real sacrifice, and now we're talking about not watching
there
football.
There are people talking about boycotting the Saints, and let me tell you. Look, man, look, I'm going to say it. Every black child in New Orleans could get shot down, and we still going to watch the Saints.
And we're going to the Saints, and we're going to be in the Superdome
cheering them on.
It's another 7-9 season because they don't have
drinking
no defense.
Dixie beer.
Right. Listen, I am a football fan. I love football. You want to talk football? I can tell you about, you know, I think it's a shame what happened to Delvin Bro, that they sent him out there on a broken leg. I think he's set for life now.
What's happening to Colin Kaepernick? He's being made an example of. I believe that's clear. collusion.
Sure.
By the owner.
Absolutely, absolutely. Only one owner said he'd hire him, and that's Mr. Khan out in, who is it, Jacksonville, I think, and he's a minority.
And they need a quarterback.
And they need
But there's a whole lot of teams that need quarterbacks. We can go to Lions right now. Okay. Line 2, Coleman, you're on with OT and the Early Bird. Lions are lit up.
Good morning,
good morning,
nephew.
Good morning.
At OT, how y'all doing?
You got
you some
Coleman, how you doing?
Dixie beer, man.
since I'm a little older than y'all, can y'all name the 4 beers that was made in New Orleans?
All I know is Dixie was one of them.
Dixie.
Falstaff?
Falstaff was another
one. My daddy used to drink that quart beer.
All right.
All right. You left out. Regal beer was made right there on the riverfront.
No, I didn't hear
of it.
And you had Jack's beer.
Jack's, I was going to say, right. Okay. Jack's Brewery. Right.
Yeah. So the point I'm making is y'all trying to paint with a broad brush.
I'm just painting Dixie.
All the beer trucks coming around to the black ballroom selling the beer.
Okay.
People drank beer according to the taste. It wasn't about a racial thing. When you're drunk, beer or any other beer.
When you're drunk, race don't matter? or does it really come out?
That's what we're talking about. Do we need to be more conscious?
Look, I'm just telling you just from observer.
Okay.
Right. Y'all was there, prejudice and bias, and Mike was trying to tell you how he felt. You was painting him in a corner because I deal with a lot of white folks in my transportation business. They don't see the same thing that we see.
I think Mike made that obvious.
Certain things a little different. And see, one thing that we have to do is quit trying to force, I'm going to just use those force white folks into a certain corner because that's really not all of them.
And
see, you don't want to irritate your friends, but you need to know who your enemy are. So that's the point I just want to, you know, bring out when we expressing some of our prejudice and bias on certain topics.
So we should have been nicer to Mike?
Yeah, I think we let Mike talk. I cut him off. We let him stay.
With a broad brush. And you know Mike listens all the time. And I'm not defending Mike. I'm just saying when the listeners are listening to the debate, Fabian, you know, that's what it really was, more like a debate, trying to get your point across to Mike and Mike trying to tell you how he feels.
Appreciate you, and
the question was said that people unemployed go to work. That's not true. People unemployed don't go to work. That's why they're unemployed. So in the midst of trying to make your point, you can't get too emotional either. And that's what was happening in that discussion with Mike. So just as a friendly listener, I just want to, you know, bring that out about the beer. Okay. So that I do know about the various beers because, you know, Slits came later than what, you know, we had here as a local beer.
Well, I ain't drinking Dixie.
Then you had Heineken.
I ain't drinking the Confederate beer.
Came, you know, later than the rest of, just were more popular. You know, among our drinkers at that time, that's all I'm going back.
Gotcha.
I'm
we got to end this segment.
Some decades.
Yeah, sure. Okay, we got to end this segment.
Because I'm going to tell you another thing that different beer companies used to do. They had their free night with the beer. You would go to the brewery and you could
drink free Confederate beer as a promotion.
Oh, don't drink Dixie beer.
Don't drink free Confederate beer, even if it's good.
We appreciate you, man. Have a great day. Look. Well, first of all, I think we let Mike speak.
We did.
But the one thing about the Good Morning Show, man, we're respectful. Like, I don't try to force my opinions on folks.
That's right.
If you got something to say, we said it. And I think you did a great job of laying out what moral
licensing is.
And I think Mike proved that point.
And I think, you know, he took the license to come on and try to berate me and try to say I didn't know what I was talking about. Because A, he's white, he's got white privilege, and B, because
he's
got the moral, he's probably got a black friend. He's going to his black friend and saying, "You see, because he got a black friend, he think he can come on this radio station." And
well, the beautiful thing is we all get to express our points of view. And man, we appreciate all listeners. Look, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we got news and sports with our news director Warren Bell, Roe Brown. And then after that, we're going to talk to Dr. Henderson Lewis, superintendent of OPSB, about these town hall forums and some of the information they're looking for. Jeff Thomas, you promised to come back?
Every time you have me. Thanks, OT, for having me on this morning. I appreciate the opportunity
God
to talk
bless
to
you,
your
man.
Audience.
Thank you for making people think.
Absolutely.